Welcome to the Grueling Truths Top 10 Divisional Playoff Games in NFL History, brought to you by Gridiron Mo. Check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. Also by SteelbergBox.com and RealBengalFans.com. Make sure you check out all those sites. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, I want to welcome my co-host, who now today became the person that heads up the Chip Kelly Fan Club, Matt Andrews-Cavage. How you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing well. I don't know if I'd go that far. I got a little bit of optimism, but I still, it's not what I wanted. What do you think of the hiring?
Well, I don't think much of it. The thing that worries me the most is the fact they didn't get Hugh Jackson because he wanted some control. He goes to Cleveland probably for less money even because he gets control. It just worries me. Like we talked last year when they hired Tom Sula, worries me that it's something like the Bengals thing where if you're a coach that wants any kind of control at all, they're not going to pick you. So that tells me also Chip Kelly has really devalued what he thinks himself. Because he wants full control, or probably no control.
I'm good with the fact that he just wants to coach. I don't really like the personnel moves that he made, so I'm glad he's not in charge of personnel. I'm a little intrigued by his. I like his spread concepts. I like the possibilities of being able to maximize what they have in Kaepernick. I think they're going to have more talent next year. Guys coming back from injury. I'm not expecting much in the way of next year, but this still also could have been worse.
Well, it could always be worse. They could have kept Jim Tom Sula, but
exactly. All right, that was a real possibility.
We get the top 10 games in NFL divisional playoff history. You want to start it off or do you want me to? I'm pretty excited to start it off with my number 10.
Go ahead.
All right. My number 10 is the 1977 Minnesota Vikings beating the San Francisco 49ers 37-24. I have an explanation for it because
you mean,
actually,
you mean 87.
Yeah, that's what I said, 1987.
You said 77.
I said 87. You go back and check the tape. And if it's messed up, edit it out before we post it. But, I mean, the 87 Niners were, I think, 13-2. Yep. You look at this team, and, I mean, the coaching staff was maybe the greatest coaching staff ever assembled. You had Bill Walsh. You had, on the same staff, you had Mike Holmgren, Sherman Lewis, Denny Green, Bob yep. McKittrick, George Seifert, Ray Rhodes, Tommy Hart, Bill McPherson. I mean, there's not too many times where you can look at somebody's coaching staff and you've heard of, like, all those guys and 90% of them were head coaches. The other thing about it is if you look going in the playoffs, they run a 6-game winning streak, which included yep. a 41-0 win over the Bears, a 35-7 win over the Falcons, and a 48-0 win over the Rams. And
right.
to make matters even worse, you're playing the Minnesota Vikings, who are an 8-7 football team and mm-hmm. barely sneaked into the playoffs. But then you get to the game, and, I mean, yeah, Wade Wilson throws for 298 yards. Anthony Carter, 10 catches, 227 yards. There's not many guys that have ever taken over a football game in a situation like that like he did. And, I mean, you had Joe Montana struggled so much that Steve Young came in for him. The Vikings were up 20-3 at the half, so Young actually did a little bit. But, I mean, that was also the year that Jerry Rice had the franchise record, 23 touchdowns, 15 games. Most points yep. in a single season, 138. Won the Burt Bell Award. And then Anthony Carter comes in and upstages him. So, I mean, it may not have been a real competitive game. I think it was 36-24. But to yep. me, even more than the Jacksonville-Denver game, and between that and the Jacksonville-Denver game, they're the two biggest upsets ever. I think that's the biggest upset ever. Was the 87 Minnesota beating San Francisco, so that's my number 10.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't put it in my top 10 for this, but my criteria is a little different. But as far as, like, upsets go, no question about it. This is right there with 96 Denver, maybe even more so because you look at the league that year in 87. I don't really think if they come out and steamroll the Vikings, you know, and the Vikings don't catch fire, I think they blow past Washington, Denver, whoever else they play. I think they were just hands down the best team in football that year. You know, on the other hand, though, If they win that, maybe they don't win in 88 and 89. So I'm happy with the result, but no question in the confines of 87, as big
that
of a as
feel
big of
worse,
an upset ever.
If you don't win in 88, Bengals do. You know, if you don't win, I wish you'd have won that game now. But I thought it was an exciting game. The thing that was a bitch is this: I missed the entire second half because Danny was my, he's my nephew, but I was going to be his godfather, so I had to be at the church when they christened him there. It drove me nuts, too, because I was missing that game, and then I get home and find out how bad San Francisco had lost. Not that I disliked the 49ers, but I didn't even like them back then, and they don't beat us in one Super Bowl. So, go ahead. What's your number 10?
My number 10 is the 1972 divisional playoff where the Cowboys were down 28-13 to my 49ers. And this was Roger Staubach's coming out party. They bring Roger Staubach out in the second half, and he leads scores 17 in the fourth quarter, and they win 30-28. One of the bigger upsets of the 70s, or one of the better comebacks of the 70s, I should say. The Cowboys they made it 3 years in a row where they beat the Niners, kept that that John Brody team from being able to possibly win a championship, and it goes down as one of the better comebacks of the ages.
Yeah, I can tell you this. I don't have it on my list, but I only got two games on my list that I didn't see just because I tried to keep it more to what I know was a great game. And, I mean, it's hard to see. If you haven't seen it, hard to compare it. But, yeah, that's a great game. And anytime the 49ers blow a huge lead in the playoffs and lose, I think, is a great game.
figured you'd go there.
Go ahead and give your number. You want to go ahead and give your number 9?
Yeah, sure. It's this is the double overtime 1986 Cleveland Jets game. Freeman McNeil gets the 25-yard run to put the Jets up 20-10 late in the fourth. The Kevin Mack caps off the good drive. Mark Moseley sent the game to overtime. I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Moseley misses a field goal to win it, and then it goes to a second overtime, and he redeems himself. This is also the Bernie Kosar near 500-yard performance. A really good game. One of the better playoff games of the 80s.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it right now because I actually got it fairly significantly higher. I've got it top 5.
Okay.
I wish the Jets had won because I hated the Browns at the time. Because back then the Browns used to be a threat to the Bengals. Not so much anymore, unfortunately. maybe it's not unfortunately. We got enough rivals, I guess. My number 9 is the 2003 divisional playoff game between the Carolina Panthers and the St. Louis Rams. Panthers upset the Rams 29-23. It didn't look like it was going to be the fifth longest game in NFL history. The Panthers went out to a 23-12 lead with 3 minutes left. Marshall Faulk scores to cut it to 23-20. Then the Rams recovered their own onside kick. Mark Bulger leads the Rams to the Carolina 16. Mike Martz played for the tie, even with plenty of time left. But Mike Martz, it's not the first time he's made a weird decision. And
yeah,
then John
sure.
Casey comes back, makes a 40-yard field goal in overtime, only to have a delay of game penalty, and then he come back and misses from 45. Then Wilkins comes out and misses just shy of the crossbar from 53. Then right as the second overtime began, Jake DeLome threw a mid-range pass to Steve Smith, and Steve Smith, being a great receiver, runs the last 45 yards for a 69-yard touchdown. It was absolutely a dramatic game. It was one of those games where the last few minutes and the overtime was so great it kind of overshadowed the fact that really most of that game was dominated by the Panthers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The thing about that game, I didn't make my top 10, but it was probably 11 or 12. It was, like we talked about before, there's probably 40 games to choose from here. You could make about 100 different lists, and they'd all be pretty good. But this was a game largely of field goals, field position, and defense. For a good portion of the game, I would not have put it very high and most memorable, but the fourth quarter was very good, and then the double overtimes were very tough, and obviously the dramatic ending. But, yeah, great game. I remember it very well.
All right. My number 8 is the 2001 playoff game between New England and Oakland, the Tuck Rule. Number one, I freaking love snow games, especially a lot of snow.
Yeah.
Played it at Foxborough. Oakland led 13-3 after three quarters. Some guy nobody's ever heard of named Tom Brady comes out with nine straight completions on a 67-yard drive, converts a fourth and four on the overtime game-winning drive. And, I mean, the kick Vinatieri made, 45 yards in a snowstorm, maybe the greatest kick anybody's ever made.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he made a kick right at the end of the game, and then he makes a kick in the overtime in a driving snowstorm, basically started the New England dynasty, and it really pissed Al Davis off, which I'm good with that, too. So.
Yeah, you know, another one of those that it was on the edge of my top 10. It was one of those things where, boy, the controversial – it definitely is up in the tight top one or two for controversial games. The Tuck Rule, no Raider fan wants to hear that. But on the other hand, Raider fans, just remember 1976, and you should be able to say it kind of evened out. But I would agree that Adam Vinatieri's performance, he's got to be – if he's not one of the top three kickers of all time, just for what he's done in the Super Bowl and that game alone, I mean, those snowflakes were ridiculously huge. The amount of snow that was coming down and how fast it accumulated for him to be able to kick in those conditions and for the distance that he went, as good of a performance by a kicker ever.
All right, what's your number eight?
My number eight is the 1991 divisional with the Oilers at the Broncos. This would be, Broncos fans warmly remember this as the Drive 2. The Oilers were largely in control of the game. The Broncos weren't doing a ton offensively, but in the fourth quarter, Elway was able to lead them on a touchdown drive. They're able to make a stand, and then they get the ball back at the two. And that particular drive was nearly as good as the one from the 86 AFC Championship game. Just the amount of fourth down conversions they had to make. The Oilers team was a very good Oilers team. And the other thing, the ending, David Treadwell's kick, the snap was totally botched. The holder catches it. It's just like he catches it totally flat, and he has to pick it up and get it just right, all within like a second. And they were able to make the kick. One of the more exciting John Elway comebacks I've ever seen.
All right, my number seven was the 1979 San Diego Houston game.
Yeah,
probably considering the circumstances, probably was the greatest upset. I think the point spread on the game was 15 or 16 points. You had the week before in the wild card game, you had Houston and Denver beat the crap out of each other, one of the most physical playoff games ever played. Houston is missing Dan Passerina, their starting quarterback, Earl Campbell, their starting running back, Kenny Burroughs, their main running back, or main wide receiver. And the thing is, to this day, and I mean, we had Dan Passerini on, we had Robert Brazil on, and all of them tell us the same thing. Rob Carpenter ran for 120-some yards on a broken ankle.
Yep.
Which is
you don't hear that a lot.
Amazing. And you had Vernon Perry. I mean, Vernon Perry played probably the greatest defensive game in the history of the NFL playoffs. What was it? He intercepted three passes and blocked a kick. I think three passes, blocked a kick. I think he might have had a sack also. Bum Phillips did an amazing job coaching that football team. If that team's not beat up, I think that team wins the Super Bowl that year, too. Plus, you had a bad call in Pittsburgh, which happens when you play Pittsburgh. NFL favorites. <that's all right.
laughs> No bitterness there, right?
No. So,
I would agree with you.
Yeah, it was the Houston-San Diego.
I like this game a lot. I like this game a lot because, I know you're not a big fan of this, but I really like the Dan Fouts, the Eric Coryell teams. They're one of the more exciting offenses.
I thought you were going to say Star Wars. But go ahead.
No. I really like the Eric Coryell teams. And 1979 one probably it wasn't their strongest one, but it was still very good. And like you said, with the guys that were out for Houston, there's really no way they should have won. This has to be Bum Phillips. Maybe it is the finest game that he ever coached. And then obviously Vernon
Perry.
Well,
you know what? That's the reason I think Bum Phillips belongs in there before Don Coryell. Plus the fact that Bum Phillips was very innovative with defensive front stuff like that. But
yep, we talked about that. I totally agree that Bum Phillips is every bit as great as Don Coryell, if not more so. Didn't make my top 10, but I'll tell you why, because I knew you'd throw it in yours.
Actually, you want to know the truth, Matt? I did my top 10 and completely forgot about that game until we started doing the show, until I came up to my number 7. So I don't know if that invalidates my entire freaking list or not, but go ahead. What's your number 7?
My number 7, 1985, Cleveland Browns, Miami Dolphins.
Really?
Ernest Biner. What's that?
I said, really?
Yeah, this was a good
Better
game.
Than
Cleveland
the
was a
Houston San Diego game.
Well, this had a big comeback, and I like the games that had the double overtimes or the big comeback. That wasn't to say that I wasn't going to put the 79 game in there, but I took it out because I figured you'd have it in yours, and that way we could squeeze another game in our 20.
We got real lucky.
But I really did like this game.
Go ahead. I just it was a great game, and that Cleveland team was 8-8 that year.
Well, that's just it. This is right before Cleveland starts having their playoff runs, and they're up 21-3 on the defending AFC champions. Ernest Biner had put up a 66-yard run to get him up 21-3, and basically Marino leads them to 3 unanswered TDs against, that Browns defense was no slouch. That was a really good, very underrated Browns defense, and they go and win 24-21. 21 down 21-3 late, and being able to come back like that makes for a great playoff game.
Now, the thing that's amazing is this. As an 8-8 team, if they win that game with New England upsetting the Raiders, Cleveland would have had an 8-8 regular season and hosted the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, that's true.
They would have
the Patriots,
maybe Cleveland.
Right?
Yeah,
maybe they would have been able to get the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they might have. Then they would have been able to get their asses kicked, but they'd have got there.
Yeah, I don't think either one of those teams would beat the Bears.
That would have been too much fun that year for them. But you know what?
I would say
with the toughness of that Browns team and their head coach, it would have been a hell of a lot more competitive than 46-10. It would have probably been more like 24-0, but it still would have sucked.
Yeah.
But go ahead, give
pretty
us your
close
six.
I would have been able to put something up. Okay.
Yeah.
My number 6.
What's your number 6?
My number 6 is the 1980 Atlanta Falcons, Dallas Cowboys. Atlanta, that was a really good Atlanta team. Very underrated. Not a lot of people talk about them. You got William Andrews and Lynn Cain back there. Both Andrews over 1,000 yards. Lynn Cain was near 1,000 yards. Steve Bartkowski, real fun quarterback to watch. He had the Alfred brothers, Alfred Jenkins. He had, they had a pretty good defense. This was a good team to watch, and they got up 24-10 on the Dallas Cowboys. When even though it was Danny White's first year, that 80 team was still really good, and Danny White leads them on 3 straight touchdowns, and they end up winning 30-27. Drew Pearson and a couple of touchdown drives. Widely regarded as one of the best comebacks in Cowboys history.
Well, and I think that was the best team the Atlanta Falcons ever had.
Might have been.
I mean, that team was good. They were a top-10 defensive team, top-10 offensive team, the Polish Rifle. Steve Bartkowski played great that year. He also had Mike Ken, one of the better tackles in NFL, or one of the better offensive linemen in NFL history. I don't have it in there, but like I said, there's like 40 games here, and I would say 29 of them are sitting at the number 11 spot. There's so many good games there.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
My number six, December 18th, 1976, Oakland 24, New England 21, 3rd-and-8, Patriots leading 21-17. They were the only team to beat Oakland that entire season. I think they beat them like 48-17 or 41-17 in New England. There's a minute left. And still, there's an incomplete pass, which would make it 4th down. Ray Sugar Bear Hamilton gets called for a roughing the passer call, which probably wouldn't even be called roughing the passer today, which is really saying a lot. Given Stabler and Oakland a first down at the New England 13-yard line from there, Oakland goes in to score a touchdown and basically go on to win the Super Bowl. And the thing is this, if New England wins that game, if they don't call that penalty, they probably do win the game. They probably beat Pittsburgh the next week the way Pittsburgh was beat up, and I would almost guarantee they're going to wipe out Minnesota also. So I think right there was your first Patriots Super Bowl team without one horrifyingly bad call.
Right. That almost made my top 10. The only reason it didn't is because out of all the games that I was cataloging, it's the one that I've seen the least amount of. I didn't see a lot of footage of it. I know what happened in the game, but I didn't see much. I didn't feel like I could really say a lot about it, but no doubt. I mean, that Oakland Raider team was one of the best in history, and the Patriots made it real interesting as they were the only one to beat them that year, and they really had – they probably should have won that game.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember watching the game. I don't remember it a lot. I was only like 7 or 8 years old. But I just remember being mad because the Patriots had some cool freaking helmets. But
yeah, I like their old school uniforms.
That brings me to number five. My number five is one you already brought up, the 1986 divisional playoff game between Cleveland and the Jets, the 23-20 double overtime game. And, I mean, like you said, great game. And the thing was, if you remember the Jets, I think it kind of tapered off there. Wasn't that the year they started off like 10-0?
Yeah, I don't remember if it was 10-0, but I think they had a really good start.
Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure it was 10-0, and then they lost their last six, including losing to the Bengals 52-20. Bengals ended up with the same record, but the Bengals weren't allowed to go to the playoffs because that's just the way the NFL is when it comes to screwing my Bengals over. There, I said it. It was a three-way tie between them, Kansas City, and Houston.
Yeah, I think Seattle, too.
I don't know. I just remember it. I think it was just those three.
10-6, right?
A three-way tie. Yeah.
Yeah, Kansas City, Seattle, where they were all 10-6. Jets were 10-6.
Yeah. And we'd all play each other, but we'd lost to Kansas City first game. Nobody cares what the Bengals did in 1986, so I'm going to digress there.
That's actually a fun
Freeman
team.
Neal plays a great
game. A lot of offense.
And the thing that was the killer was the fact that I think Mark Gastineau had a personal foul penalty that kept the final drive alive, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, the fourth quarter, that was a game that the first three quarters, pretty boring. The fourth quarter was absolutely ludicrous. I mean, Webster Slaughter going off. Veteran kicker Mark Mosley ties it with 7 seconds left. He missed a 23-yard kick in overtime, but then connected from 27 in the second overtime. So, I mean, come on. Mark Mosley had some problems. In 83, he had problems in a championship game against your Niners, too. And maybe
that's
next
true.
Week that'll be a top 10 game. Because that's probably
that
up
was,
there.
That,
it's a great
that's
game
the forgotten. That's one of the forgotten classic championship games.
Yeah, one of us will definitely have to bring that up next week for the championship games. But are you? We're up to your number five now, right?
Yes. My number five is the 2011 divisional between the Saints and my 49ers. Jim Harbaugh's first playoff game. The Saints were probably favored, at least by most experts, to go win that game just because of the inexperience in the playoffs of the Niners, and especially Alex Smith. The Niners come out, they get a long touchdown to Vernon Davis to start the game. They get a turnover, and they get out 17-0. The game goes on. Brees is able to bring them all the way back, and they get up 24-23 in the fourth quarter, and then the fireworks start. Alex Smith leads a pretty good drive, scores on a really nice 28-yard keeper. Brees immediately responds with like a 70-yard bomb to Jimmy Graham. And then the final drive, Alex Smith leads a really good drive, hits Vernon Davis on a really a key third down to set up to get in field goal range. And then with about 10 seconds to go, makes probably the best throw of his career. Hits Vernon Davis in the end zone. They win 36-32. They're known among Niner fans as the Catch 3. One of the best playoff games I ever saw by far.
Yeah, I didn't put it in my top 10 because I knew you'd have it there. I mean, the thing about that game was
fair enough.
Everything you just said, Matt, could have been shortened into this. there was four lead changes in the final 3:53 of the game.
Yep. Exciting.
But that was a great football game. And I remember you were excited about it, too. And you were telling
I
me,
was.
I told you Alex Smith would be in the Hall of Fame and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's right. I remember saying I must have been smoking a lot if I was saying that.
The only way you would say that is if you were Alex Smith's dad. All right. Number four, I got the 1977 Ghost of the Post, Oakland 37, Baltimore 31 in double overtime. The Ghost of the Post, referring to tight end Dave Casper's nickname.
Yep.
You know, look skyward. Kenny Stabler lost the ball up with 29 seconds left, and Baltimore had 31-28. And that's pretty much the history there. And, I mean, it was a great football game. They played it at Old Memorial Stadium. Actually, it was 31-31 when he threw that. Why did I say 31-28?
Yeah.
But he catches it, scores the touchdown to go in the next week to get completely screwed over in Denver. I don't know if anybody – that's another game that can make the top 10 championship games where Rob Lytle fumbles the ball before he gets to the goal line. But that's an Oakland team that I think may have won a Super Bowl again, which would have been back-to-back
right.
for him there. But, I mean, he had a ton of great players. He had Burt Jones, probably his last shot on the big stage because of the injuries, a guy that probably could have been a top 10 quarterback of all time. And that was Baltimore's swan song. They'd won the division in 75-76, but had been pretty much blown out both times, one time at home, one time in Pittsburgh by the Steelers. But that Colt team was a great football team. I mean, they were the 75-76-77. Those seasons there, you had the Colts, you had the Bengals, who were really good football teams, but
mm-hmm.
Oakland and Pittsburgh were great football teams, which is what – what kept Cincinnati and Baltimore from ever winning anything. My number four is the 77 Oakland-Baltimore game.
As is mine. You got the Raiders in that game are basically, you know, the full complement of their offense is working. You know, Clarence Davis scores. They get Casper scores an early game and or an early touchdown in the game. And, you know, the Colts offense, they were getting points on the board. They had like a 60-yard interception return. They had an exciting near 90-yard kickoff return, and it kind of keeps them in it. Burt Jones, I like Burt Jones a lot. But you watch his footwork, you watch the way he throws. He looks almost exactly like John Elway. Really good quarterback, very underrated. And Dave Casper has near one of the best games of his life. Who doesn't love the over-the-shoulder catch? And then, obviously, he's a you know,
I didn't know
Jared
for the Colts. I was cheering for Colts. I didn't love it.
But you can at least appreciate the greatness of the play. But,
not really.
Yeah, that's my number four as well.
I was having a birthday party during that game, too. It was like my 8th birthday. I remember that, too. And I got a pair of roller skates, Matt. No response to that? You never got roller skates, I guess, when you were a kid. Go ahead. What's your number three?
My number three is the longest game. 1971 Chiefs-Dolphins.
All right, let's just stop you right here. So is mine. I think we're going to be the same here, the last four. So we'll just talk about the games together. Go ahead.
Perfect. That's the Ed Todolak game, I believe. I don't know if his record is still standing, but it stood for a very long time, well over 300 yards, all-purpose yards. They had like nearly 100 rushing with a touchdown. It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
it was a great game.
Yards, I think it was 85 yards rushing, 110 passing yards, returned three kickoffs for 154, and totaled 350 all-purpose yards.
Yep. Gets a couple of touchdowns. The Dolphins were able to get right. They just went. They just kept pace the whole game. The real bummer in that game is one of the best kickers of all time, Jan Stenerud, just did not really show up. And even in overtime,
missed a
31-yard double overtime.
Field goal to win the game.
Exactly.
Or Blair Walsh, Stenerud.
At the time, Jan Stenerud is probably the best kicker in football. He's not that. He's at least top two or three. I got to believe he's number one. And for him to miss a kick like that, it was just that's crazy. That was Kansas City's best chance to get back to the Super Bowl. They didn't really have a good rest of the decade. And even in overtime, Ed Podolak, I think that's when he led the overtime with a really long kickoff return to set it up. And Didn't come through, and the Dolphins were able to get to the Super Bowl.
Well, Stenerud was blocked on the second one, though. Not necessarily his fault. Then Upremian, I think, missed like a 50 or a 52-yarder. And then Upremian hit a 37-yarder to win the game.
Right. Yeah, longest game in history. Real exciting game.
Well, so our number three is the 1971 Minnesota at Miami at Kansas City. You know, when you're going through your list, if you cross one off too soon, it can make you think that Minnesota is Miami. I just figured I'd bring that up. So don't cross it off too soon. So boys and girls, when you're at school, even if you're taking a test, don't cross it off too soon, or it can make you give the wrong answer.
That's right. Tip of the day.
You want to start with number two?
Sure. I got the 1974 Miami-Oakland, known as the Sea of Hands game. That was, boy, it's really hard to top a game like that. But, you know, just back and forth. And then, you know, Cliff Branch. I mean, man, the catch he made, the 72-yarder. Miami gets right back on the drive. And the way Don Shula put it is we probably scored a little too soon. And one of the best moments in the Snake's career, the drive downfield, and you know Miami's defense was not bad. I mean they were back to back champs, they're defending champions. They've gone to the Super Bowl 3 years in a row. This was still a really good team. Defense was good. They got pass rush on the Snake. The Snake was not really known for elusiveness and being able to run well, but he was able to get just enough outside the pocket, and you know as he's going down, being able to hit Clarence Davis in the end zone, who was not really well known for his hand, you know, in the middle of like three guys. Just a fantastic game, 28-26.
Yeah, it's hard to top that, and I mean it was damn near a tie for me between my two I was picking for number one. But the thing was this. The other thing that was great about this game is you had guys like Cliff Branch, Fred Biletnikoff, Ken Stabler, who will probably be in the Hall of Fame. You know, the guys on the Dolphins side. You had a bunch of guys that are Hall of Famers. But it is debatable. I mean, the biggest plays were made by Clarence Davis, who makes the game-winning touchdown catch. And then Benny Malone has the game of his life, rumbles for 23 yards and a touchdown to give him the final lead. So, I mean, you had a little bit of everything in that game, and I think that's why we agree that that is number two. And number one, I'm going to bring up number one first just because I saw it live, and that would be the 1981 San Diego-Miami game, which San Diego goes out to a 24-0 lead. Miami finally benches David Woodley. You get Don Strock comes off the bench. You get the hook and lateral, Tony Nathan to – who was it that caught that?
Nathan gets credit for the touchdown. That's weird. At least in the box score that I saw, I mean, maybe it was a misprint. Because I was looking at it, where's the fucking ladder? I thought that was right before the half.
It was. It made it 24-10, I believe, at halftime. And then Miami actually gets up 38-31.
Yep.
And, I mean, they ran the hook and ladder right before halftime. Dan Fouts leads them back to make it 38-38 with a minute left. Then Kellen Winslow blocks a field goal in the last seconds that would have won it. Leroy Jones blocks a Miami field goal that would have won it. I mean, the team's gained over 1,000 yards. Strock replaced Woodley, goes 29 for 43 for 403 yards, four touchdowns. Fouts was
like three-quarters of a game.
And Fouts was 33 for 53 for 433 and three touchdowns. Difference is he had a running game over Brooks and Muncy a little bit at least. Rolf Bernerscha wins the game 13-52 into the overtime. He kicked a 29-yarder to win the game. I mean, you had also, I think Winslow blocks another kick there also. Winslow, 13 receptions, 166 yards, blocked field goals. The thing and the most iconic moment from that game is him probably not being able to walk off under his own power as his teammates carrying him out into the cold Cincinnati air, where the next week the Bengals beat the living hell out of them, 27-7 to go to the Super Bowl. That made me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, it was a good year.
A little bit better.
no doubt. I mean, you get the Winslow game, the Winslow performance is probably the one that stands out to me, but it also, you know, Strock really doesn't get any credit. I mean, he's just known as a career backup.
Well, he lost. You never get credit when you lose.
Well, right, but, you know, it's a heck of a, you know, being able to come back. You know, you had Wes Chandler replaces John Jefferson that year, still gets over 1,000 yards. He has the 58-yard punt return. I mean, just the amount of great plays in that game, the amount of big plays, plays you just don't see anymore, especially
yeah,
the hook and ladder. It was just
remember,
fantastic.
Strock, like, what, 7 years later, goes to Cleveland, signs a contract a week later, is down 23-7 to the Houston Oilers, who were a hell of a football team back then. Cleveland's got a win to make the playoffs. What'd Strock do? He leads them to 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter to win the game 28-23 and get them into the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, it makes you wonder
one of the better rivalries.
Why Dave Shula – makes you wonder why Shula just didn't make Strock the starting quarterback after Bob Greasy retired.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what was going through their mind, but then at least the decision was taken out of his hands when they were able to get Dan Marino for their for the Dolphins
yeah,
after losing.
Yeah,
maybe
won a Super Bowl. Yeah. All right, well, I guess we're done with this show. I'll see you later. No, I'm kidding. But make sure you check us out on the Grueling Truth Facebook page. Spreaker, Stitcher. You can check out all the shows from this week. We had the Pick'em Show with Leon Searcy and former Denver Bronco Mark Cooper last night, or the night before last, which is out now. We had the Bengals Weekly Show of myself and Joe Kelly bitching and whining about that Steelers game because that's what we do now. I had a great interview with Jeff Kemp talking about his book, Facing the Blitz. Also, you can follow me at RiverMonster11, I believe. Matt, you got any final words? You want to plug your Twitter?
My Twitter is at MTASCabbage. And also, I know that another place that you can see us, if you have iPhones, just go on the built-in podcast app and just type in the Grueling Truth, and you'll see all of our shows on there. I was able to find that today. Not even on Spreaker, just the built-in podcast app that comes with your iPhone. Just type in Grueling Truth and we'll show up.
That's cool. But I don't think we get credit for those listens, though. So go to Spreaker and listen to it. But you can listen to it the other
better
way.
Better to go to Spreaker, yeah. Yeah, either way. But yeah, probably rather you go to Spreaker, but you can find it right on your iPhone if it's a little hard.
Yeah, and also it sounded really dirty when I asked Matt to plug his Twitter. But all right.
Great.
So make sure you check back next week with the Grueling Truth, where next week we will have the top 10 championship games in NFL history. And then the week after that, we'll start our 2 weeks to the Super Bowl, where we're going to have a lot of shows. We have a lot of football players on, former stars. A lot of surprises coming there that I haven't even told Matt about yet. But make sure you keep tuned in. Check out the Grueling Truth Facebook page. Check out Gridiron Mo. Check out SteelbergBox.com. Check out RealBengalsFans.com. Also, check out Steelers Life Facebook page, where they make fun of Bengals all the time for being whiny little bitches. But that's all right, because we can take it. And they'll be whiny little bitches after they go to Denver without Big Ben. So also, check out RealBengalsFans.com. Also, we did a Cincinnati Bengals trivia show this week. Maybe we ought to do an NFL trivia show like the week leading up to the Super Bowl, man.
That sounds like a good plan.
But so make sure you check us out on all of those. So any last comments, Matt? I think I already said that once. But
yeah, just looking forward to, you know, 4 really good games this weekend. Definitely excited to see. I think the Seattle-Carolina game is the most intriguing to me.
Yeah, I think they're all going to be good games. The Pittsburgh-Denver game is probably the most unknown because who the hell knows what's going to happen there. The Kansas City-New England, I mean, you're looking,
that's a good
I mean,
one too.
On the surface, you would think that's an easy New England win. But if you look underneath the surface, you'll see that they've been 2-4. I don't even know if Edelman's assured to play this week yet, is he?
I heard he is, but you know, well, who's to say how effective he's going to be?
Yeah, because, I mean, some people were telling me a few weeks ago not to worry about him because everybody would be back healthy and ready to go, but it doesn't look like that.
Well, I think mostly they will be, but we'll see.
But, so, and like I said, Seattle-Carolina is the game I want to see, too. That should be violent, which I like to watch. But but so make sure you check us out next week for the Pick'em Show with Mark Cooper, Leon Searcy, myself, Matt, and one surprise guest. Also, we will probably have a boxing show come back next week, either next week or the week after. So like I said, just go to the Grueling Truth Facebook page, check that out. So for Matt Andrews Cabbage, this is Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.